Welcome to the Gene Oliver Podcast, where we talk all things business, art, and lifestyle. This is your podcast for building a more creative life. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at GeneOliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Gene Oliver, and today I'm talking with author, guest chef on the Kelly Clarkson Show, workshop host, and comedian Danielle Cardis. Danielle is my friend that makes me belly laugh, like very few can make me laugh, and then in the next moment can share in-your-face truth that makes me stop in my tracks. Danielle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I mean, just listening to you say that honestly makes me a little teary-eyed because you are an individual that, number one, I value your friendship. I mean, I feel like we walk similar roads and It's so important to find people that are like-minded, but it's a gift when you find people that really know what you're going through. Yeah. And we don't talk super often, but when we do, it's like, oh my gosh, no, time has passed and I think you're brilliant. So just the invitation and hearing those glowing, beautiful thoughts about me make my heart so warm. So thank you.
No, you are very loved, and not just by me, but like my whole home, like everybody in our home. And then when you're funny, even online, I'm like, everybody wants to watch Danielle. And so, yes. But before we dive in, will you share a little bit about yourself and your business?
My name is Danielle Cardis. I am an author and a food stylist. And I feel like it's so funny because we can have all these titles like I do blah, 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 blah. And that's where my worth is. And it's not really what I want people to ever take away from the things that I do. Like I feel so blessed to have these crazy, amazing, cool titles, but it's really not who I am. Like you said earlier, I am silly. I enjoy cooking. I happen to have a cool job where I get to work on the Kelly Clarkson Show and national television. I am so blessed to be able to travel around and speak and keynote speak and speak to women's conferences about how much I love the Lord. And then everything falls in line afterwards. Mm-hmm. Everything else I get to do is a means to and ends, which is living with life beautifully with my family. And I will probably get into it a little bit later, but that's something that I didn't even know how to articulate until I took your workshop.
Really?
I didn't know the type and style of entrepreneur I was until I took your workshop. And then I thought, oh my gosh, that's why I'm doing it for my family. I am an entrepreneur that does to enjoy with my family. And so that's been so eye-opening and key for me over the last year, and who I am as a maker, as a creator, as an artist, as a speaker, all these different things. I mean, basically, let's boil it down. It's 65 ways to make money. It's great, beautiful things, but it's income revenue for my family. Right. And when you're a freelancer and a creator and an artist, sometimes you do have to find great ways to pay the bills. Yeah. And so I've been very fortunate to have the type of very driven doer personality that lends itself to running a small business, which is my greatest gift and greatest weakness at the same time, because I am driven to a blind train, you know, steamroller point. But I'm also very tender and sensitive at the same time. So it's a dichotomy that we are really still learning to deal with and live with as I'm here entering into my beautiful 40s. But yes, I have all these hats and titles, and my greatest joy, honestly, is being a wife and a mother. Like, that's really it. And I do love travel. And I'm a Francophile to the max. And I've never been. But these things, that's the real Danielle. Yeah. Yes, I've never been. I'm obsessed with France and never been. Never.
Well, after this call, I think we got to put that together.
We may be needing to go to France, like, for real.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I love so much of what you just said, because it's, I want to actually read directly from your website, because I think it captures like your heart so clearly. Oh. Life is good right now, no matter what. What does that mean? It means that even though life will challenge you, will be downright hard sometimes, even though you may not have the best of everything, fine ingredients, fancy appliances, a gorgeous kitchen, you still have a beautiful life and you have a purpose. Keep in mind that the most important things already surround you. Spend time among the people you love in your tiny living room with paper plates, plastic cups, and joy. A good life is as simple as working hard and eating a big bowl of chili with your babies. A good life is lifting others up when they need a hand. A good life, like a good meal, is worth sharing. I feel like this message, that it's a reminder to others, but also probably to yourself.
Oh yeah. I'll go back and read that sometime. I'm getting a little teary eyed even now.
Yeah.
Sometimes it gets so easy to do. It's my default. It's easy to plan. It's easy to try and generate income. But we're not rats. We're not part of a rat race. We are meant to live a life beautifully and joyfully. And sometimes, I mean, even I forget that often. Mm-hmm. I forget like, hey, you know why you're here?
Yeah.
To bring joy to other people, to find the good. And it doesn't mean that life is this beautiful photo op. It means that life is messy, but how do you find the good stuff in it? Yeah. I feel like I didn't finally start to experience real joy in my life until I recognized that, like, hey, joy and shitty stuff can happen at the same time.
Yeah.
You can. Yeah. I just lost a dear friend to colon cancer, and we, in the very end of her life, we were literally just like laughing in her bedroom, in her kitchen. And these are the things that life is made of. At her celebration of life, we're like sharing stories about Annie and all kinds of fun stuff that went on and all the things that she taught me. That's joy in the midst of difficult stuff. And so I feel like once we sort of master that and laugh at ourselves, I mean, humor is my ultimate salve. It's my go-to. I think the Lord gave me a crazy sense of humor because he knew what type of ride I was in for. If I could make jokes about it. I mean, I was the kid when something bad happened when I was little, I started laughing and not out of disrespect. I mean, it often seemed disrespectful, but the giggle just came out of nowhere. I'm like, here it goes. And it's
can you imagine your boys if they did that?
Oh, they do.
They do.
Other day. Oh gosh, let me remember the story. He did something super naughty and we were like, I can't, it was like a danger thing. And we were disciplining him or talking him through it. And he just started giggling, cracking up nervous like. And I looked at Mike and Mike said, well, oh shit, he's got it. He's got the inappropriate, I'm going to giggle. He just started laughing Rummy style. And that was me as a child.
Oh, that's awesome.
So Milo's got it. I haven't seen it, but my 5-year-old has it.
What is your story behind food and gathering and how you use your gifts? Like, how did this all start?
This all started when I first got married to Mike. I was traveling all the time as a makeup artist and I thought, I got to be home more. I miss my husband. We were having sort of like the beginnings of rocky times and we're newlyweds. I'm 26 years old. And I thought, I'm going to stop traveling. I'm going to open a restaurant. This is what will save our marriage. And then Manola was born, this beautiful little European inspired bistro, fresh pasta, fresh bakery style bread. I mean, we were doing all these sort of buzzwordy things before it was popular here in Tacoma, Washington. And I thought that that was what was going to save my marriage. And it ended up being the thing that drove a larger wedge. So it took 3 years from, you know, the time we said I do until Manola closed. But in that time, Mike and I decided, you know what, we're going to call it quits. We're done being married. You've got your things. I've got my things. Let's go our own separate ways. And we were pregnant with Noah. And I know that they say, hey, do not have a child to save your marriage. But in our case, the Lord used Noah to save our marriage. We lost everything. I mean, the restaurant closed, cars, home, you name it. It was a slow drip. And we went bankrupt. We started over and I decided I will never cook again. I wasn't cut out for this. I want to be a mom. I'm going to go back to makeup. I really missed the boat on my calling. I don't know. I was confused. I thought this is something I'll never do again. And slowly the Lord had other plans. And I remember one day specifically standing in the doorway of Manola and I felt the Lord whisper to my heart that he was going to take care of me through this place. And when Manola closed, I asked God again, I said, you promised me you're going to take care of me through this place. And here I am like applying for food stamps. Like what you promised me, Lord. And the neat thing about God is his promises are never void. He is so faithful. And my ideas of what being provided for were completely different than the Lord's. And so I slowly started cooking again. And then I'm giving you Reader's Digest version, but I started cooking again and we were broke and so happy. I mean, Mike and I fell in love again. I talk about it in some of my books over all the leftover pound cake that I loaded in the freezer and just had marveling at this beautiful baby. We didn't have the stress. We weren't so selfish. We weren't like focused just on my needs and his needs. Like I think that's so key in marriage. Like we talk about, you know, like silly, fluffy things when we get married, but we don't talk about like spiritual warfare and lifting another person up and how to navigate through those times. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know. I mean, mm-hmm. we were grown. Mike was 31. I was 26. We were just, but I still feel like we were just kids. Mm-hmm. And so navigating that and having this beautiful baby, we just started over from scratch. I never had designs for an empire. I never had designs for a cookbook line and cookware. And I mean, I didn't have all the things that we're going for now. I was literally just putting one foot in front of the other and asking the Lord to guide my steps instead of me guiding mm-hmm. my steps. Mm-hmm. And God just opened door after door after door. And a lot of people say like, oh my gosh, you're so lucky, or you must have had connections, or you must have come from money. And I'm like, honey, listen, I was super poor growing up. My parents taught us how to work hard, but if you wanted something, you had to work for it. I lost my house and cars. And I remember going to work one day, I had to call my boss and let her know my car got stolen. Well, my car got repoed. I mean, and I never experienced repo before. And I remember Noah was 2 years old and he said, Mama, they taked our car. And I said, well, that's why the Lord gave us legs. We're going to figure out the bus system and we're going to get to work. And so these little things, I had no idea that they were setting me up for a career and sharing with thousands yeah. of women. Yeah. Your marriage can struggle. You can lose your home. And you can still be okay. And that's not God's design for your life, but he also doesn't promise us ease, mm-hmm. but he promises us beauty and to be with us in it. And so one thing led to another, and I started writing the books. And then I got my book by myself into Costco. And getting my book into Costco at the time, my little self-published work, was like winning the lottery. I mean, it's such a crazy, fun story. I was teaching makeup in Bellevue. This woman comes in. She needed her makeup done. She was a buyer at Costco. And I was able to visit with her and share with her and show her my stuff. And they said no. They were like, no, thanks. And I'm just you don't know yet. like, why don't you read it? This is really valuable. And I've never, I mean, fortunately, I don't know if it's like a sociopath in me. I have the Steve Jobs part of my personality where I'm like, oh, if you don't like it, you just don't know yet. You're going to love me. So I pushed and pushed, and we got the book in Costco. I started appearing on television locally first, and then we moved to the national level with Rachel Ray. And then it's just been these steps, and here I am long-winded, but these steps in working on TV, and every single time it's like, people are like, wow, did you always want to do that? And I said, no, I really didn't. I started surrendering my life and my desires and my designs to the Lord. And this is what God has chosen for me. And it's not easy. Mm-hmm. It's not all hearts and flowers. It mm-hmm. is very lonely sometimes, but it's also very brilliant, and I'm grateful for it.
Mm. How did you and your husband start working together? And has it been a natural collaboration, or has it stretched you two to figure each other out better? What comes easily, and what have you had to work on?
Oh my gosh. Let's start on the work on part. When you work with your spouse, it creates a different dynamic. It creates like a coworker dynamic. I feel like every marriage relationship can probably relate to some point. You have kids, they have soccer practice, you might go to church, you might lead programs. I mean, you're doing all these things, you're trying to figure out, how do we get these done? You divide and conquer. Sometimes that takes the romance out of your relationship, and you have to really be intentional. And when I say intentional, Mike and I, we didn't have babysitters for a very long time. So our intentionality meant sleeping kids in the car and sharing a burger together. I mean, it doesn't have to be these lavish, like take me to the play or the movies or whisk me away on a trip because we couldn't afford it. It was like, how are we going to connect while we're trying to hustle and really survive? I think we were in survival mode for the better part of 6 or 7 years until I recognized like, gosh, you know what? There is nothing in this world that's more important than having time with my family. And I'm not going to work 7 days a week, 24/7 anymore. Mm-hmm. And when I decided that, it was difficult at first to tell people that are used to calling you at 10 o'clock at night and receiving an answer within 5 minutes, like, I'll get back to you in the morning. That was hard for my scared personality at the time. I thought the harder I work, the better I can provide. And sometimes that's just not true. So Mike and I really have had to work on keeping romance in our relationship, me respecting him and not degrading him as a man. I mean, I am the first one to be like, why the hell did you do that, you dumb idiot? And Mike has never called me a name in our whole marriage, never raises his voice to me. And he's always like, you can't talk to me that way. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, that's kind of gross, right? But I still want it done how I want it done, which is not great for your marriage relationship. So it's caused me to really take a step back and like, how am I communicating with him? I really love him. He's my number one supporter, my biggest fan, my very best friend. How do I continue to respect him and not like coddling? I mean, we don't coddle each other. There's not, there's a phrase. I mean, I'm probably offending some people, but Mike's always like, you know, you don't have to tickle my nuts. You just have to tell me, like, tell me what you're thinking. And so I know that might be offensive for some people. I'm very, very sorry, but we don't do that for each other. We're really black and white and honest. And I'm an over-communicator. Mike is an under-communicator. And so that's been very, sometimes I don't need to say everything I'm thinking. That's a life lesson that has served me the best. Just because you have a thought or an emotion, you don't have to share it. That just because it's your truth, this world we're living in, my truth, share it. Go, girl. No, don't share it. Leave it to your own dang self.
Yeah.
So me keeping these things to myself, working through it on my own, that feels better than me word vomiting all over Mike the things that I'm feeling in the moment, because words carry weight and they hurt. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Mike. And so I've learned restraint in that aspect, and that's helped us to love each other more. And then we do things where it's like, let's not talk about work. Let's just talk about other stuff. And sometimes you're staring at the wall like, the only thing we got going on right now is work. Well, what are the things that lights our fire? Like what? And it's funny, I think when I stopped thinking Mike had to complete me or do something for me, like your spousal relationship is supposed to do something for you, they're literally only supposed to add to your life. They're not a missing puzzle piece and now boom, all of a sudden you're complete.
Right.
They're their own complete person. You're your own complete person. You tie it together with God at the top. For me, it's not for everybody, but for us. And that's where the magic happens. Mm-hmm. Having independent interests. Mike goes to the movies by himself. We both need deep alone time to come back together and be okay. So, I mean, there are things that we do really well now. Like, I love planning with Mike. The brainstorm sessions we have are so much fun. And it's easy for us to get overwhelmed by the amount of things that we have to do to keep our business going. And so we're entering into a new season. I've shared with you a little bit before about how sometimes the same old way of doing things doesn't work anymore. It's like that way is tired and we have to figure out a new way. Mm-hmm. So we're continually blazing trails.
And the world has changed a lot.
Yes.
And in the ways that the world keeps changing, mm-hmm. the things that sometimes, but it's in some ways it can be really good for your creativity. In some ways it can be really tiring for your creativity.
Yes.
But over the years, what have you learned about yourself in regards to saying yes to the things that are good for your family financially and saying yes for the good of your creativity? And how does that struggle or rhythm, what does that look like for you?
Well, first of all, it's giving myself work hours. I think for years, I touched on a little bit before, I would work 24/7. And right now we are in a 24/7 season, which I know it's not temporary. It is temporary. It's not forever. Mike and I have discussed it. We put parameters around it. We know we are working to deadline to launch a vodka brand, finish up a book, get a workshop out there. And we're also working on a television show at the same time. So this has taken up, this summer has been a difficult summer. Mm-hmm. So all those things sound like, oh my gosh, so bougie and lofty. Like, it's so wonderful. It is. It's wonderful and a blessing, but they take a lot of time. And so we literally had a conversation 2 days ago. I'm like, it's feeling yucky. We're at each other a little bit more. What can we do? But guess what? Your project deadlines can always wait. They can always wait. And that's a truth I really want women, especially. There is so much pulling on us. It can wait. It can always wait. It can always be pushed back a week. Every deadline, no matter what pressure, we've got a lot of outside pressures, publishers and magazines and people like, we want what we want yesterday.
Right.
Text messaging now. It's like, we're launching this vodka brand and we're doing it quickly because there were so many, the bottles and labeling and everything is put off because of COVID. And then you're having to make images and it's a blessing, but we're getting text messages like, hey, can't wait to get this content. Well, it's got to wait. Not in a bad way. And you can't beat yourself up for it. I think that that's been my biggest achievement, learning how to say no, learning how to put some boundaries up. And when you do that well, you are able to break the mold every so often and be like, yeah, you know what? I can do that this evening. Or let's just throw it all and get on a plane and go to Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. Let's do something fun because it can wait. Your babies don't keep, youth doesn't keep, your knees don't keep, go for the run. I mean, there are things that we need to rejuvenate us that are more important than work. Period. And that's coming from a place too, not of complete financial stability. I think that that's something someone might say, well, that's easy for you. You've got all your bills paid. That's not true. That's not true all the time. We ebb and flow, and it's feast or famine sometimes in a business where you're freelance. Mm-hmm. And this summer, especially, it has been lots of outgo, not a lot of income, but you still have to say no. Mm-hmm. You still have to say, gosh, I need to say no to that project, even though I may need that $5,000. Well, my mental health and me staying up at night,
right,
not worth $5,000 in stability.
Right.
And it always works out. It just might be a little bit more difficult and stretching, but it works out when you say no.
Yeah. Leaders need community, but I've also found over the years that leaders often walk much of the journey alone. Yeah. Are you good at being intentional about community and your support system? And how would you encourage others to find true support and encouragement?
Oh my gosh. To be very transparent, I'm not good at it. I do walk the road alone quite often. I want to be the woman. There's two things going on. I am the woman that will support you fiercely to the end. I will deliver dinner. I will pick up your children. I will clean your bathroom. I will do things that you have never asked me to do. I won't ask for those things. And sometimes when I feel like I'm drowning, which is often this summer, I don't know how to ask or who to ask if it's not like a job situation where I've got X number of dollars. If I'm paying somebody, that feels different for me, but I'm not good at receiving. I mean, I'm barely good at asking for prayer. I told a friend yesterday, and it feels really vulnerable. It's funny because I'm such an open person, but there is a vulnerability when you come to somebody and say, I really need prayer. I kind of feel like I'm falling apart. And then I'm also not good, just being transparent, I'm not good at receiving all of the things. Like, why don't you do X, Y, and Z? Well, my overwhelmed button's already on. So when someone tells me you need to do blah, 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 I shut down even further. Because I'm like, I can't add more to my list. And intellectually, I know that I need to do certain things. But that's something that I'm working on. And I truly believe that God brings people into our lives in certain seasons for certain purposes. Mm-hmm. And I have recently told the Lord, like, if you see fit, I'd love a friend. I mean, I have got wonderful, my sister is my very best friend, my mom. I am blessed with beautiful friendships, but I have asked the Lord for friendship in this season. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult doing some of the things that I do to have friends that understand or relate. And I think that's been my biggest, like, sort of, I don't know, I never fit in MOPS groups or moms. I never compared my kids' bathroom habits. I love my children fiercely. And I would go to these groups and they would all be talking about when their child rolled over. And I'm like, well, aren't they all going to roll over at some point? Like, my worth has never been in comparing my kids' milestones. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about your kids' wins and successes. And Milo was so sick for such a long time, and we had MRI after MRI. So, I mean, he didn't even speak until he was two. Mm-hmm. So I think that comparative, like, oh my gosh, we're popping a tooth out, and we were always excited, but I was never like, it was never the comparison thing, just never got me going. Cause I'm like, I want to talk about business. Do you ever want to sell anything? Women are looking at me like I'm like, you know, I'm speaking out of both sides of my head. Like, we could turn that into a business. I just want to be at the playground and talk about meal plans. And I'm a chef and cook and do all this stuff. I don't meal plan. That's something that is different for me too. So I feel like I'm touching on 45 million different things, all to get at the fact that boundaries are good. Your yeses can be yes and your noes can be no. And it has been difficult for me to find community in this job.
Yeah,
very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that too. Have you been... I think I know the answer. You've already answered this. So have you been good about asking for what you need from others? Do you have an example where you were drowning in life or business because you weren't letting others know what you needed? And then what happened when you did ask?
Yes. You know what? My sister has been such a constant source of support for me. And she is so funny. I mean, I wish she was like right here next to me, cracking jokes. She's the dry version of me. But she is such a helper in her nature.
I wish people could watch this whole video part two, not just the audio. Because your body language is so hilarious as you're talking.
I do. I speak with my hand. My whole entire body tells you the paragraph. I mean, from down to my toes, up to my fingers, I'm like all about it.
Even when you were talking about being at the park, you want to start a business?
I'm like, you want to start a business? What do we got in the back of your car we can sell? Like, what are you good at? I'm literally like, there's women like, oh, my finances are struggling. My husband's having a hard time with this. I'm like, excellent. What do you have in your repertoire right now we could sell on Etsy? I'm like, that's my gift. I'm such a fixer doer. I'm like, you tell me you got a problem in your marriage. I'm like, okay, first of all, you got to get in the bedroom. We got to get in the bedroom. You got to figure that part out. Okay. Ain't nothing. A little, boom, boom, time isn't going to fix. After that, after you come back together biblically, we're going to figure out what you can sell. And so sometimes people are like, is this lady real? Like, it's the realest of real.
Maybe it's real, my friends.
Community gene.
So do you have an example of when you were drowning and you asked for help and then
this
changed?
Recently, I opened up to do private dinner parties. And then when do you ask for help? I opened up this summer to do private dinner parties, and that's something I haven't done since the pandemic. And it's such a passion of mine. I love going into someone's home and having the run of a menu. These women have decorated their homes and yards in the most beautiful ways.
I want you to come do a dinner at my house.
Jean, let's do it. Such a love language of mine to create gorgeous food in a beautiful setting. And where it's like the clients that are the most fun are like, do whatever you love. We love food. And I'm like, so excited. So I had taken on literally like three dinners in a row. My sister works full time. She's a teacher and administrator. And I rely on her. I'm like, what are your days open to come help? And she already has a full time job. And I remember telling her, I'm drowning. Like I don't have everything prepped out. This is literally like a week and a half ago. And I don't like that feeling. Like I'm a little out of control. I don't have it all done and together. Mm-hmm. My mom showed up. My sister showed up. I mean, I'm literally steeping rhubarb syrup. They're making chimichurri. my brother-in-law's got Milo on his back. Everybody's just coming together in the kitchen, prepping all the things out before we head out to the property to do the dinner.
Yeah.
And I called my brother and his wife and I'm like, I need you to serve. We don't have enough servers. We're feeding 50. We're creating 15 plates at a time. I need runners. And they're like, done. We left all the kids here with my 15-year-old niece. There's six of them with pizzas. My entire family went out to this farm to do a dinner. And I felt like that I could breathe. And I don't like to ask for help. And that's a situation where it was like, this isn't going to happen unless everybody comes together. And within a half an hour, everyone's at my house or dropping kids off. They've got pizzas. We're prepping and we're out to the property. And it just felt like air. It felt like I can breathe and we can totally do this.
Mm-hmm. And it was with people that you knew you could trust.
Yes.
And you could share your vulnerability.
Absolutely.
Do we have people in our lives that are just true friends, that are people that it's okay for us to be vulnerable with, to not have it all together with? It changes your life.
Yeah.
To have 100%. People like that.
We're born to be in community. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that even if you have a lone wolf personality, if you feel like you're not relating to people, there's something that happens in just communing and having dinner. I think that's one of the most important things about what I do. I'm cooking food. For a long time, I thought, well, what's the value in that? Like, I'm literally just cooking. There is so much life and value and hope in a meal. Mm-hmm. And just inviting people in. My husband said today, we've got a photographer friend coming out to our house. He'll be here around noon. We're shooting some stuff. And Mike's like, can I just meet him somewhere and pick up the equipment and can we cancel? Our house is messy. And I'm like, you know what? He lives in a messy house too. There's dishes in our sink and we're going to studio shoot in the front room and we'll pop it up and I'll make some quesadillas for lunch. It can be messy. We're not canceling. This is real life. Mm-hmm. And when we start to say things like that to ourselves, it's easy to be like, oh my gosh, the bathroom's not clean. Milo runs around naked all the time. He's in a weird naked phase. I'm constantly worried. I'm like, put clothes back on. This is living. Inviting people into our living helps other people live well.
Yeah. Yeah. When you look back over starting over, writing books, hosting live workshops, sharing your gifts on television, and even new projects that are in the works, what are a few turning points or even milestone moments for you personally and in your business?
I have these gut feelings every once in a while where it's like, this is what you're supposed to do, even though it feels crazy. I remember a time when I was just trying to get on national television and they weren't interested in me. And the Rachel Ray show said, you know, hey, if you're ever in New York, just look us up. Well, let's have a meeting. And I told Mike, we've got to get to New York. Let's host a workshop in New York. And we hosted the most brilliant workshop at Sunday. Is it Karen Mordecai? Karen Mordecai's studio, Sunday Suppers out in Brooklyn. Gorgeous space. Mm-hmm. And it was $4,000 to rent. I thought, how are we ever going to do this? That was all the money in the world for us at the time. Mm-hmm. And I put it up online. It felt very Fire Festival. And it was like, just $1,000 to come.
We have not too stable plane. We'll be getting you there.
We have a styrofoam container with a sandwich in it, and we promised you filet mignon. I had no idea how it was going to come together, but I had this gut feeling, Danielle, you're going to go and I will equip you. And I had to listen to that voice. I listened to the Lord. And I know that that was a turning point in our career. We threw probably to date the most beautiful workshop and the most beautiful time with 10 women, one of the most incredible workshops we've ever done. The best content, the most beautiful decor. It happened organically. People came from all over the country. And it was like that turned into the meeting that I had on the television show. I was able to book the show. I went on to do Rachel Ray, gosh, probably 20 times. And then that led to all these other different things. That turning point where I packed a suitcase full of props and said, okay, Lord, you're going to have to show me how to do this. And it was incredible. I invited, you know, key people in our industry. People showed up and it was like, this is amazing. I thought, this is really cool.
You're like, it is amazing.
It is amazing. Even writing my book. I didn't know how to write a book. I barely graduated high school. I knew I was supposed to write a book. I had a girlfriend who was a paralegal at the time. She said, I'll edit your book. Let me just take a peek at it. She met me in a parking lot with that thumb drive and said, you're a great makeup artist. Maybe writing's not for you. I'm not kidding. And I still had this feeling, I've got to do this. I met with another woman who was referred to me. She ended up being the dean at a prestigious university around here. She said, don't ever share my name. I love to do these things on the side. And I said, I'm not smart. I wrote a book, but I am not the brightest person in the world. And she said, well, let me be the judge of that. I felt so insecure giving her that thumb drive. She called me a week later and I was ready for the firing squad. And she said, you are a gifted and beautiful writer. You just need some mechanical help and I'd love to help you. And I just get teary-eyed thinking that she saw in me what somebody else couldn't. And it wasn't my girlfriend's fault. It was a mess. I couldn't string a sentence together to save my life. But now I've come to know that stream of consciousness is actually a really beautiful way to write. It's how I create books. I am 13 books in now. And if I would have listened to the woman that said, you got to stick to makeup. This is not for you.
Yeah.
I needed that woman to tell me, you have a beautiful gift and there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Well, and I have a question too. The woman that was the professor, did you know her personally?
I didn't know her personally.
I always think too, I think so often I tell people your friends and family are not your customers usually.
No.
And so even take that same thing when it comes to advice or encouragement and things like that, that that person was just too close to you to see something else.
You can't
else.
Be a prophet in your own country sometimes.
I always, that's why I teach. Yes. I'm like, just like Jesus, you know.
Just like Jesus. It's true. Yeah. I have cooked for people that are very close friends and it's not special. I will go to someone's house that I've never met before and it's literally like the most special, incredible event and the value in what I'm doing is received completely differently. Yeah,
because they it's how they see you.
Yes. Yes. And that's a hard pill for us to swallow. Sometimes we think our friends have to be the biggest supporters. Strangers are my biggest supporters. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sometimes is like, wow, that's crazy. And I've lost a lot of friends on this journey, not in crazy, weird fallout ways, but just trickling and fading away. Yeah. Not like no one ever had a conversation like junior high style and said, I don't like you anymore, but right. It's like the presence leaves. And you're like, and for a long time that pained my heart. I was like, I miss Susie, whatever. I mean, I don't have a friend named Susie, but you mourn those friendships. But it's like, sometimes God's like, it's okay. Come along with me and I'm going to fulfill you in every way that you need. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I used to be angry at the people and now I'm not anymore. Whenever someone leaves my life, it's like, I pray for them and wish them well, but not like they owe me anything. Probably 5 years ago, we were doing this exercise at Kim Taylor's house, and she had a beautiful woman named Lisa there who was doing these hammered letters. And she said, well, what is your word for the year? What do you want to focus on? And I said, well, I'd like the word free. And she said, well, why is that significant? And I said, I like the word free because I want to allow others to be as free as I'd like to be. Sometimes we want all the freedom in the world to make our own decisions and what's best for our own hearts, but we're so hurt when other people make decisions that are best for their hearts. Mm-hmm. And so living with that principle, it helps me to love someone right where they're at, even if where they're at is walking out of my life.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. Well, you inspire me with your art and creativity, how you invite others into laughter and not taking themselves too seriously, and also how you share your faith openly in real and beautiful ways. Some people choose to not share their faith in their business and others share it openly, and it brings different connections with their followers and customers. Yes. What have you seen come out of sharing your relationship with Christ?
I've only seen good stuff. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest with you. I will be in boardrooms with executives that do not believe in Jesus, that have nothing to do with, they're not religious people. And I will have some people say, like, I want to know the Jesus that you know. Mm-hmm. I have never been like in your face about it. You're wrong. Wherever your belief system is, I've always just shared the goodness of the Lord in my own life. I've never required anything from anybody. And I think that's where the difference is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes how I share won't be good enough for some Christian circles. And I do get a little critique from some circles, like I'm not being religious enough. Mm-hmm. And then I will get critique from circles that are not religious at all and say, hey, you know what? Save the Jesus. I just want the pot roast. Mm-hmm. And I will just politely respond to all parties. I normally don't respond to anybody. I just let people leave their comments and move through. But in my heart, it's like, I just got to be me. I got to be me. And the me that I am really does have a deep-rooted love for other people. Mm-hmm. And in a deep-rooted love for other people, you do accept where they're at. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not something I would do, I'm not an internet warrior talking about politics. And I love politics. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I follow it. I watch it. I do all the things, very opinionated. I'm a voter. You name it. But I'm not out there telling anybody, not in love first. And I leave those conversations for private times. I have been able to have some of the most deep and meaningful, beautiful conversations quietly with people that have changed hearts. Me spewing a post on the internet full of hatred and anger, and this is my viewpoint, I believe satiates the people that agree with you, and it alienates the people that don't. Yeah. And I'm just not about alienation, but I think it's very, very important to live authentically. And I think that word's a buzzword that's been used up, but authentically, like if somebody asks me how I feel about something, I'm never going to skirt it. I'm mm-hmm. going to tell you in love. I'm going to tell you why I think those things. And I'm never going to judge you for believing a certain thing or voting a certain way. I'm so political. I don't hate any president. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, yeah. Even sharing that with people is eye-opening. Like, they don't have to believe the same things that I do for me to not agree with their policies, but we still respect the office of the presidency. Those are the principles that I want to perpetuate. Yeah. Not like, this dumb shit's bringing our whole country down. I mean, will I say those things? Probably in private, but depending on who's in office. But that's not for public consumption.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. But talking about politics and life and religion, I think is so valuable in a different way. I think you can probably remember this pre-social media, in the workplace, at gatherings, at friends' homes. It used to be so acceptable to talk about things and issues. It was something I witnessed my parents do. I saw it in the workplace. I was a bank teller for a lot of times. There would be women that would ask questions or, well, I don't like this, or who are you voting for? Like, that was commonplace. Right. Social media steps in and sort of has demonized certain things, and that's not commonplace anymore. So I strive to share first my own viewpoints and love, and always see where someone else is coming from, but then not be apologetic. Like, I still love you. We're still going to get a margarita. Like, I mean, that's what communal in life is supposed to be about. And we have to have two differing opinions to come down the middle, period.
Yeah.
So
are we able to discuss some of your new online content coming?
Yes.
Okay. So what are you? What? All right.
So Mike and I have been hard at work.
Good. So what are you hoping to bring to your followers in a new way, and what helped you to make this leap?
Yes. Okay. So we're working on getting our workshops online. I think it's so important to offer modules, quick hits. And you were a big inspiration for that, Jean. I got to be honest with you. I feel like you are always on the cutting edge and the cusp of what people need before they need it. Mm. And that resonates with me. And so just watching you and your practice and how you do things, the things that you offer, I mean, light years before anybody else is doing it, I think you're doing something different and special. So even taking what I learned, do people understand how valuable your Creatively Made Business Workshop is? I mean, can we just do a shameless plug? That was one of the most life-changing, life-giving weekends I have experienced in the last 5 years. Mm. Absolutely incredible and authentic and tangible, with pieces that I could work on. It helped shape the way, and I've been teaching workshops for 10 years. It helped shape the way that I relay information. Mm. I think, oh my gosh, this is so brilliant. The way that you string things together, the way that you bring people together, and the way that you lay out disseminating information to your followers, fans, your public in such a way that is so tangible. I mean, I was like, oh my gosh, this all makes so much sense. So if you have an opportunity to jump on Jean's Creatively Made, please do so. But we are
go to creativelymadebusiness.com with yes. this free testimonial yeah. by Danielle. Yeah.
Okay, Kelly, pop in a 10% off for new subscribers, okay? Come on, Kel. use my code name, Rustic Joyful Jean, and you too can experience the same piece I do. We should do that, Rustic Joyful Jean. That's a great savings code.
It is.
But yes, we are launching online workshops and modules for our book writing workshop, which has been really valuable for women. I think we started those last year, and the demand and outcry for how do I write my own book? We are wanting to share our stories. Mm-hmm. I believe that everybody's got a book in them. Yeah. I really, truly yeah. do. And I believe that writing a book is it's like a birthing experience. It takes all the energy, all the everything. And I'm showing people my process and how I did it and how I self-published and how you can write a query, secure an agent, and traditionally publish. So there are two facets of it. And it's been so neat to see these women's journey in mm-hmm. writing their books, cookbooks, lifestyle books.
And don't you think also one of the things that's over and over and over in your story is that you don't easily take a no?
No, I don't.
And a lot of times it could just be it was wrong timing for that other, yes. the person you're wanting something from. Maybe they haven't had a time to look it over, or maybe yes. they're overwhelmed and they have too many things coming in. What I love yes. About your success is over and over again, you were like, man, they just don't know yet.
They just
and I'm in a right. So Rachel Ray happened because you had to get out of your comfort zone, go to yes. New York, host an event, put money on the line.
Yes.
And then you were able to meet up with them.
Yes.
Getting into Costco, which is literally, I don't know anybody else that was self-published that's ever been able to get their book into Costco. So what kind of that's insane.
And they said no. They said yes. no multiple times. Right. I did the traditional. Then I had the in, and it was like, no, we love that you love this idea for yourself. Enjoy your book. Good. Congratulations. It's not a fit for us. And I'm like, listen, I'm going to drop the book off. You're going to read it. And then once you read it, if you really don't like it, then we never have to speak again. But please get in that. You got to hook them in the first page. get through the introduction. If it's garbage after that, toss him and it was $15 on me and enjoy your life.
Yeah.
And I will never forget when that buyer wrote me back and she said, it's beautiful. We'd love to speak to your attorney. And I share this line in all the speaking everywhere. So if somebody has heard it before, forgive it, but it's great. But I'm always like, well, I could call you from my mom's house and pretend my name is Donna, but I don't have an attorney. I'm very poor. And we started the negotiations with me and my tiny little self-publishing that was like, no, Costco's a juggernaut. We can't go into Costco. It's going to bankrupt you again. I didn't take no for an answer. It took 6 months to work the Costco deal out. And it was sold out signing after sold out signing, but I was working the line. They had my book booth at Costco, 3,000 books behind me. And I knew, because I'm the publisher, every book that stays in this warehouse today, I'm going to have to buy back. Yeah. I was working the line. I'm the author. I wrote this book. This is a big deal. It's $18. Throw it in with your Super Bowl stuff. I sold and sold and sold. I stayed in the Tacoma Costco for hours after my event selling my book.
Yeah.
And people were like, you're the author? You have to be willing to just get out of your comfort zone and do it. I mean, traditional.
And Donald Miller, just the other day, he talked about there's two different business owners, the person who's like literally butt is on the line and the person who has investors. And the person who has investors, they're going to have merchandise. They're going to have all this stuff. But the person whose own money is on the line, they're going to do exactly what you just did. And you were talking about two different stories of success.
Yes. It still blows my mind. I'm like, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe we did that. I hosted an event. I rented out a local theater here in Tacoma, 1,200 seats for my book launch. And that was an investment. And it was like, I told Mike, I said, this is going to cost us a lot out of pocket. And I'm just going to have to pray that we break even and that people come. I don't know if I can fill a theater of 1,200 people to talk about my book. And the book, my latest one, You Were Always There, it's my memoir, but it's about how we can't lose who we are. I think for a long time, I thought I could lose who I was to life and experiences. And the whole entire time, I've always been there. You've always been there. You were always there. And so this message was so important to me. It still is important. I mean, the book's only been out for a couple of months, but we rented the theater and I told people, I'm like, hey, it's expensive with Ticketmaster fees. It was $50 for people to come. And that's a lot of money in an economic downturn when half of it's fees. And we were able to sell 400 tickets. I mean, that wasn't a sellout. That could look like a failure. I think it was a wild success. Mm. The event ended up costing me $3,000. And that was still renting the theater, going through Ticketmaster, all the decor, all of it. It was an investment I knew I was supposed to take. It hurts to pay out to invest in your business. But I know that I still don't know the fruit that's going to come from that theater tour.
I also think it teaches you, it teaches your husband, it teaches your boys that you celebrate big things.
Yes. Yes.
That you, the things that are a big deal, like you show and you put things on the line that show it's a big deal. And it's not always going to be a $3,000 thing. Sometimes it means stopping your day and clinking champagne glasses and saying, man, we did this. Yeah. And maybe it's going to be a hike. Maybe it's going to be like calling people up and bragging about like, and seeing, I'm so excited about what I just did. And sometimes it's going to be renting out
a theater and being like, oh my gosh, if this goes south, it's going to cost me $20,000 that I don't have. I'm always signing up for something that I don't have the coffers to back it up. And my poor husband has just gotten used to it. He's like, all right, who am I to say? Let's just see what happens. And we're always literally throwing the pasta against the wall and seeing what sticks. And it makes for a very exciting relationship, but it makes for an exciting life. And it's not for everybody, but I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, well, I would love to close with one last question. So I love to ask everybody at the end of the interview. So if you were not a chef, author, comedian, speaker, what would your alternative career choice be?
I think I would be a teacher. I think I would have a classroom. I experience more joy in going into my boys' classrooms and bringing cupcakes and decorating and finding the kids that are the goofy ones and the odd man out with the no friends. That was me. I mean, I love to love on the unlovely kids. Mm. My dad, I get teary-eyed right now. My dad was such a great example. Like, he was a principal growing up. And I mean, he had this reputation. You bring the misfits to Mr. Hawkins, and he found the things that he, that were so lovable in them. And I think that that's how God views us. We're all very unlovable works and messes in various stages of disarray. And there is something so lovable about each of us.
Yeah.
And so I think that if I wasn't doing all this, I would be in a classroom with preschool kids, just loving on them and covered in glue and cupcakes.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Would you please tell our listeners where they can purchase your books, sign up for a live workshop, or just learn about like all the new online content and everything
yes,
that's coming?
Yes. RusticJoyfulFood.com. You can join our newsletter there. And then I try to send out, I was really good about it for a little while, a weekly newsletter. The summer has kind of gotten away from me. We're doing it probably like once a month now, but we do free recipes, all the events, when I'm going to be on television. We're starting filming season back up for Kelly Clarkson. We're going to be filming my show here pretty quickly, which is really exciting.
Very exciting.
So there's so many fun things in the works. So RusticJoyfulFood.com, join the newsletter. You can get all my books online. I'd love for you to have a copy of You Are Always There. I think it's like $12 on Amazon right now. Get it. I get a dollar of it. I love that part. But yeah, that's it. And follow me on Instagram, Rusty.
You guys have got to follow on Instagram. That's where the magic is, if you ask me. Like, just because it's funny, it's heartfelt. You share great food. Yeah. It's just so good. So such a sweet peek into you and your life. And it brings me a lot of joy. And then, like I said, there'll be times I just am crying, laughing, and then there'll be something else. I'm like, oh man, that's like, man, that hit hard. Whoa, I need to think about that. Oh, Danielle, thank you so much for today. Thank you for just sharing your journey and so many good things and some not repeatable things that are now included too. So I love you very much.
Oh, thank you, Jean. You're a joy. And I'm so just darn blessed to know you. I think that you are brilliant and such an inspiration to me. So you, my dear, have a wonderful, fabulous day. Thank you for having me. Thank you for seeing something special in me, because that's priceless.
Thank you. Next time we need to get you and Mike together.
Yeah. Oh, we would love to do that.
And we'll do an interview with both of you. That'd be great.
And Mike is great too. He's charismatic, but very quiet. People are drawn to him. He has such a beautiful perspective in how he sees the world. And he's such an artist. I mean, the way that he uses his camera and develops film, and he's pretty brilliant. Like, I'm always telling people, like, I aspire to be like somebody like Mike when I grow up. He's pretty
cool. You guys are a great team. Just a beautiful team. Talk soon. Thank you so much.
Goodbye.
I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day-to-day like I was. Go to jeanoliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at jeanoliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. We have over 150 courses from teachers around the world. Thank you for joining me this week. Don't forget to let us know what you thought of this week's podcast, and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.